Chapter 12. Furniture that had a very odd look beside the settles, and the flaring gaslight pendant from the ceiling. There was a flowery carpet on the floor, but, instead of reaching to the fireside, its glowing vegetation stopped short at Mrs. Boffin's footstool, and gave place to a region of sand and sawdust. Mr. Wegg also noticed, with admiring eyes, that, while the flowery land displayed such hollow ornamentation as stuffed birds and waxen fruits under glass shades, there were, in the territory where vegetation ceased, compensatory shelves on which the best part of a large pie and likewise of a cold joint were plainly discernible among other solids. The room itself was large, though low, and the heavy frames of its old-fashioned windows, and the heavy beams in its crooked ceiling, seemed to indicate that it had once been a house of some mark standing alone in the country. "Do you like it, Wegg?" asked Mr. Boffin, in his pouncing manner. "I admire it greatly, sir," said Wegg. "Peculiar comfort at this fireside, sir. Do you understand it, Wegg? Why, in a general way, sir," Mr. Wegg was beginning slowly and knowingly, with his head stuck on one side, as evasive people do begin, when the other cut him short. "You don't understand it, Wegg, and I'll explain it. These arrangements is made by mutual consent between Mrs. Boffin and me. Mrs. Boffin, as I've mentioned, is a high flyer at fashion. At present I'm not. I don't go higher than comfort, and comfort of the sort that I'm equal to the enjoyment of. Well then, where would be the good of Mrs. Boffin and me quarreling over it? We never did quarrel before we come into Boffin's bower as a property. Why quarrel when we have come into Boffin's bower as a property? So Mrs. Boffin, she keeps up her part of the room, in her way. I keep up my part of the room in mine. In consequence of which we have at once, sociability I should go melancholy mad without Mrs. Boffin, fashion, and comfort. If I get by degrees, to be a higher flyer at fashion, then Mrs. Boffin will by degrees come forwarder. If Mrs. Boffin should ever be less of a dab at fashion than she is at the present time, then Mrs. Boffin's carpet would go backwarder. If we should both continue as we are, why then here we are, and give us a kiss, old lady." Mrs. Boffin, who, perpetually smiling, had approached and drawn her plump arm through her lord's, most willingly complied. Fashion, in the form of her black velvet hat and feathers, tried to prevent it, but got deservedly crushed in the endeavor. "So now, Wegg," said Mr. Boffin, wiping his mouth with an air of much refreshment, "you begin to know us as we are. This is a charming spot, is the bower, but you must get to appreciate it by degrees. It's a spot to find out the merits of, little by little, and anew and every day. There's a serpentining walk up each of the mounds, that gives you the yard and neighborhood changing every moment. When you get to the top, there's a view of the neighboring premises, not to be surpassed. The premises of Mrs. Boffin's late father, canine provision trade, you look down into, as if they was your own. And the top of the high mound is crowned with a latticework arbor, in which, if you don't read out loud many a book in the summer, and as a friend, drop many a time into poetry too, it shan't be my fault. Now, what'll you read on?" "Thank you, sir," returned Wegg, as if there were nothing new in his reading at all. "I generally do it on gin and water." "Keeps the organ moist, does it, Wegg?" asked Mr. Boffin, with innocent eagerness. "And no, sir," replied Wegg, coolly, "I should hardly describe it so, sir. I should say, mellers it. Mellers it, is the word I should employ, Mr. Boffin." His wooden conceit and craft kept exact pace with the delighted expectation of his victim. The visions rising before his mercenary mind, of the many ways in which this connection was to be turned to account, never obscured the foremost idea natural to a dull overreaching man, that he must not make himself too cheap. Mrs. Boffin's fashion, as a less inexorable deity than the idol usually worshipped under that name, did not forbid her mixing for her literary guest, or asking if he found the result to his liking. On his returning a gracious answer, and taking his place at the literary settle, Mr. Boffin began to compose himself as a listener, at the opposite settle, with exultant eyes. "Sorry to deprive you of a pipe, Wegg," apostrophe he said, filling his own, "but you can't do both together. Oh, and another thing I forgot to name. When you come in here of an evening, and look round you, and notice anything on a shelf that happens to catch your fancy, mention it." Apostrophe, Wegg, who had been going to put on his spectacles, immediately laid them down, with a sprightly observation. "You read my thoughts, sir. Do my eyes deceive me, or is that object up there a pie? It can't be a pie." Apostrophe, "Yes, it's a pie, Wegg," apostrophe replied Mr. Boffin, with a glance of some little discomfiture at the decline and fall. "Have I lost my smell for fruits, or is it a apple pie, sir?" apostrophe asked Wegg. "It's a veal and ham pie," apostrophe said Mr. Boffin. "Is it indeed, sir? And it would be hard, sir, to name the pie that is a better pie than a wheel and hammer," apostrophe said Mr. Wegg, nodding his head emotionally. "Have some, Wegg?" apostrophe, "thank you, Mr. Boffin, I think I will, at your invitation. I wouldn't at any other parties, at the present juncture, but at yours, sir. And meaty jelly too, especially when a little salt, which is the case where there's ham, is mellowing to the organ, is very mellowing to the organ." Apostrophe Mr. Wegg did not say what organ, but spoke with a cheerful generality. So, the pie was brought down, and the worthy Mr. Boffin exercised his patience until Wegg, in the exercise of his knife and fork, had finished the dish. Only profiting by the opportunity to inform Wegg that although it was not strictly fashionable to keep the contents of a larder thus exposed to view, he, Mr. Boffin, considered it hospitable, for the reason that instead of saying, in a comparatively unmeaning manner, to a visitor, "There are such and such edibles downstairs, will you have anything up?" apostrophe you took the bold practical course of saying, "Cast your eye along the shelves, and, if you see anything you like there, have it down." Apostrophe, and now, Mr. Wegg at length pushed away his plate and put on his spectacles, and Mr. Boffin lighted his pipe, and looked with beaming eyes into the opening world before him, and Mrs. Boffin reclined in a fashionable manner on her sofa, as one who would be part of the audience, if she found she could, and would go to sleep, if she found she couldn't. "Hem!" apostrophe began Wegg. "This, Mr. Boffin and Lady, is the first chapter of the first volume of the Decline and Fall of apostrophe here." He looked hard at the book, and stopped. "What's the matter, Wegg?" apostrophe "Why, it comes into my mind. Do you know, sir," apostrophe said Wegg with an air of insinuating frankness, "having first again looked hard at the book, that you made a little mistake this morning, which I had meant to set you right in, only something put it out of my head. I think you said Russian Empire, sir?" apostrophe "It is Russian, ain't it, Wegg?" apostrophe "No, sir. Roman. Apostrophe, "What's the difference, Wegg?" Apostrophe, "The difference, sir?" Apostrophe, Mr. Wegg was faltering, and in danger of breaking down, when a bright thought flashed upon him. "The difference, sir? There you place me in a difficulty, Mr. Boffin. Suffice it to observe that the difference is best postponed to some other occasion, when Mrs. Boffin does not honor us with her company. In Mrs. Boffin's presence, sir, we had better drop it." Apostrophe, Mr. Wegg thus came out of his disadvantage with quite a chivalrous air, and not only that, but by dint of repeating with a manly delicacy, "In Mrs. Boffin's presence, sir, we had better drop it." Apostrophe turned the disadvantage on Boffin, who felt that he had committed himself in a very painful manner. Then, Mr. Wegg, in a dry unflinching way, entered on his task, going straight across country at everything that came before him, taking all the hard words, biographical and geographical, getting rather shaken by Hadrian, Trajan, and the Antonines, stumbling at Polybius, pronounced Polybius, and supposed by Mr. Boffin to be a Roman virgin, and by Mrs. Boffin to be responsible for that necessity of dropping it, heavily unseated by Titus Antoninus Pius, up again and galloping smoothly with Augustus, finally getting over the ground well with Commodus, who, under the appellation of Commodius, was held by Mr. Boffin to have been quite unworthy of his English origin, and not to have acted up to his name in his government of the Roman people. With the death of this personage, Mr. Wegg terminated his first reading, long before which consummation several total eclipses of Mrs. Boffin's candle behind her black velvet disc would have been very alarming, but for being regularly accompanied by a potent smell of burnt pens when her feathers took fire, which acted as a restorative and woke her. Mr. Wegg, having read on by rote and attached as few ideas as possible to the text, came out of the encounter fresh, but Mr. Boffin, who had soon laid down his unfinished pipe, and had ever since sat intently staring with his eyes and mind at the confounding enormities of the Romans, was so severely punished that he could hardly wish his literary friend good night and articulate tomorrow. Apostrophe, Commodius, apostrophe, gasped Mr. Boffin, staring at the moon, after letting Wegg out at the gate and fastening it. Commodius fights in that wild beast show 735 times, in one character only. As if that wasn't stunning enough, 100 lions is turned into the same wild beast show all at once. As if that wasn't stunning enough, Commodius, in another character, kills them all off in 100 goes. As if that wasn't stunning enough, Vitellus, and well named too, eats 6 millions worth, English money, in 7 months. Wegg takes it easy, but upon my soul, to a old bird like myself these are scares. And even now that Commodius is strangled, I don't see a way to our bettering ourselves. Apostrophe, Mr. Boffin added as he turned his pensive steps towards the bower and shook his head, I didn't think this morning there was half so many scares in print. But I'm in for it now. Apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.